Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday, November 15th, 2018. A little later, we're going to talk with Catherine Trell about the AFC North, including the chances of Marvin Lewis and John Harbaugh keeping their jobs in Cincinnati and Baltimore, respectively. But first, we're going to talk some AFC West, and joining us to do that is frequent contributor to the show. It is The Athletic's Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Bill?
I am good. I am very intrigued by the game that is coming up on Monday night. And granted, I'm not just saying that because I am an ESPN employee and this is a good game on Monday Night Football, which you might say has not always been the case this season. You may have had a pretty mediocre game last week, but this week things are a lot better. It's Chiefs and Rams. It was supposed to be in Mexico City. It is going to be instead in Los Angeles, California, which is why, Lindsay, you find yourself in Colorado this week, your hometown, or your home, I should say, with the Rams.
Yes, I'm down in Colorado Springs. The Rams came out here on Monday thinking that they would spend a week training at altitude and then fly to Mexico City, which is at about 8,000 feet elevation. And mm-hmm. the Air Force Academy here in Colorado Springs is about 7,500 feet. So even higher in elevation than Denver is, actually. But instead, they found out their game was moving back to Los Angeles, but the Rams decided to stay here. There's mm-hmm. just been, there's still so much upheaval back in LA, and specifically the part of Los Angeles where the Rams train up in Thousand Oaks, mm-hmm. where they still have people from the organization who are still displaced from their homes.
Of course.
A lot, they had already made arrangements for players' families to come out here to Colorado. So they're just spending the entire week here in Colorado Springs, practicing at the Air Force Academy. And then they're going to go back to LA for what hopefully could be the game of the year. Very, very, very excited. Should be awesome. I mean, the first time Monday Night Football has been back in LA since like 1985.
Wow.
So yeah, this should be really fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird to go on like a week long vacation that you were expecting and not expecting at the same time for the Rams. But I mean, this is a team that, and we'll get to the Chiefs element of this in a second, but a team that, you know, certainly, of course, with the Cooper Kupp injury is dealing with some adversity, some changes on the offensive side of the football. I mean, do you think they're going to be able to sort of weather that? Or do you think it's going to be a situation where maybe we're not appreciating how much Cooper Kupp really adds to the Rams offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the important things about Cooper Kupp is that it's not just that he's a very good receiver on third down. And mm-hmm. I think it's just the relationship that he has with Jared Goff that they've built together over the last couple of years. I mean, almost immediately at the start of 2017, I mean, Cooper Kupp like became Jared Goff's guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was that security blanket for him. They're very close friends away from the field. So he's just that guy that, you know, when everything else, if everything else breaks down, and that doesn't happen that often in a Sean McVay offense, but he was just the guy that Goff was just so comfortable with. But I think the good news, if you're the Rams in this situation, I mean, there's no good news losing Cooper Kupp, obviously, but this isn't the first time that they'll have to play without him this year. They lost him for a few weeks after he suffered that knee injury back in early October. So they know what their offense will look like without him. So it's not like they're going into the game of the year all of a sudden, you know, removing the most important piece for the first time. So, and I think, you know, I said most important piece. I think the most important piece is Todd Gurley. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think they have a lot of mechanisms to make up for the loss of Cooper Kupp, but, you know, I don't want to minimize it, but I think if there's any team that is set up to, you know, lose your favorite wide receiver, mm-hmm. it's probably a team like the Rams, who has Brandon Cooks, who has, you know, some emerging tight ends. I think we might see them do more with two tight ends now. And then mm-hmm. obviously you have Todd Gurley, who is going to be able to catch a lot of passes. It could be, you know, a really good weapon in the passing game as well. And a lot of other offenses are not equipped the way the Rams are to make up for that sort of loss.
You know, I'm happy you brought that up, Lindsay, because I was going to ask you about Todd Gurley and about this Rams game plan against the Chiefs. Now, we know when teams are playing the Rams typically, or they're playing the Chiefs, the most logical game plan, and we saw this with the Seahawks last week against the Rams, was you want to run the football. You want to chew up as much clock as possible, want to keep your defense and your pass rush fresh, and want to keep a possibly dominant passing attack on the sidelines. So that would be a logical thing for either of these teams to do in this game, where the total in Vegas is 63.5 points, which I believe is the largest total in at least modern recorded history. There might be a line in the past that was higher, but I have not seen a line that was higher than that that anyone has any evidence of. So let's say 63.5 is the highest total in recent football history. Do you think either of these teams are going to change their strategy and try and play more conservatively and try and run the ball more to try and keep the other team's offense on the sidelines? And if you do, which of these two teams do you think is more likely to sort of go after that strategy?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, we talk about how both of these teams and their passing games and the quarterbacks, but at the heart of both of these teams, they're really good running teams. And a lot of times they can be very much built around their running backs. I mean, Kareem Hunt led the NFL in rushing last year, and the games when sometimes the Chiefs are at their best, it's the games where they can keep feeding Kareem Hunt and he can have those wild games. And what's so fun, I think, about this matchup is that both teams can beat you both ways. They can beat you running the ball. They can beat you if your running game gets eliminated and they have to pass. So, you know, I think both teams are going to be very committed to running the ball. I mean, it's just so much a critical piece of their identities. And these are two of the best pass catching running backs in the league as well. So I think I think both teams are going to want to run the ball really well. And I think the other interesting thing is neither of these defenses are particularly good at stopping the run. So, you know, both teams could be effective at doing it. And what's so crazy is when you watch how teams try to defend the Rams or try to defend the Chiefs is, do you want to try to, I mean, I remember watching the Broncos against the Rams, a couple of weeks ago last month. And, you know, the Broncos defense played about the best anybody has played against the Rams all season. And they did so saying, we're going to shut down the passing game and we're going to make Todd Gurley beat us. Well, that's not a great gamble. I mean, it's not like you're asking, you know, I don't know, Chris Ivory or some, you know, very average, mediocre running back. I'm sorry, Chris Ivory, but I don't know why I just picked him out of off the top of my head. But look, this is Todd Gurley. I mean, this is a guy who is legitimately an MVP candidate to beat you. And I think the Rams offense or the Rams defense, if they say, okay, well, we're going to try to really, you know, focus on stopping Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and we'll dare Kareem Hunt to beat us. Well, that's not really a great proposition either.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's really fascinating to me because I think, you know, you look at that total, look at 63.5 points. I'm inclined to say it's going to go under just because it's such a huge total and because it would make sense for both of these teams to try and slow down the game or try and not slow down the game, but like slow down the plays and not play aggressively and sort of use the running game they have to keep the other team's offense off the field. But like at the same time, it also feels like they could score 28 points in a matter of 3 or 4 minutes. And what's interesting to me is that before the season, if we were looking at the Chiefs, I think we would have said, hey, this defense is not going to be very good. If I told you that Eric Berry was not going to be playing come week 10, he hadn't played a snap all year because of a heel injury, you'd be like, oh, that Chiefs defense is going to be a mess. We kind of figured the Rams defense was going to be good. This was a defense that last year, it was good. It was, I think, in the top six, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking it up now in DVOA. By the end of the year, they were sixth, yes, in DVOA. This year, in that same category, they are 20th in DVOA. This defense has not been very effective. And so, of course, you covered Wade Phillips you were around Wade Phillips, certainly, in the Denver days. And are you surprised that he hasn't figured out how to make this defense work yet? Or is it just a thing where because they made so many changes, you kind of have to hope it just, you know, coalesces and comes together during the second half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is personnel. I think they miss Aqib Talib a lot. I mean, I think the Marcus Peters addition got a lot more headlines back when it happened in the spring, just because, I'm not even sure why, because maybe it's his age or, you know, the number of pick six he's had recently, but in the kind of the baggage that came with him in terms of his interactions with the coaching staff that he's played for dating back to the time of college. But Aqib Talib was really the more important piece there in terms of on a play-to-play basis. I mean, the thing about Marcus Peters is that he will make some spectacular stops. I mean, in doing so, he gambles a lot and he can be beaten a lot more easily than Aqib Talib does. Talib is a true shutdown corner on every single play. And I think they've really, really missed that presence. And Marcus Peters' play has suffered because of it in recent weeks. I mean, he's coming off kind of a really rough stretch of games. And so they're going to need more from him. But I think one of the things we've seen this from Wade Phillips defenses before, where, you know, the most amazing thing about Phillips over the course of his career as a defensive coordinator is that his track record with the first year that he comes into a place is really impressive. The way he's able to turn around a defense in a single season is really, really incredible. But then the second season, there tends to be a drop off. It certainly happened in Denver. You know, they won the Super Bowl his first year as a quarterback, and then the defense kind of had a step back the next year. I don't know if that means that, you know, opposing offenses are kind of catching up to it, but his greatest impact tends to happen into his first year that he comes in and gets to kind of install his defense fresh. And, you know, I honestly wish I knew exactly why that was, that there was kind of the step back. But yeah, I mean, it's been surprising that they haven't been as good. But like, I think the Peters playing without Tlaib has been a really big part of that. And then the fact that they just have not had consistent edge pressure.
Right.
And those are really the two most important pieces to a Wade Phillips defense, is the outside pressure and then a pair of cornerbacks that can really play man coverage. And we just haven't seen that consistently enough from them. So I think that's really, really where it comes down to, because look, Aaron Donald is going to wreck just about every game he plays in. But if you're not getting the help on the edges and then on the back end, there's kind of a limit to how effective that can be.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about the Chiefs' perspective in this game, if you were like I'm thinking of Independence Day and like the weak spot in the alien ship that Randy Quaid flew into. If there's a weak spot in this Chiefs offense, it unfortunately for them happens to be directly across from where Aaron Donald and the Ndamukong Suh line up, which is that defensive tackle. You look at this Chiefs offense, Austin Reeder is playing center. Andrew Wiley is playing right guard. They are in for Mitch Morse, who has been out with a concussion, and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the good doctor, who is on injured reserve. Karen Irving has been playing very well, their left guard, former Browns castoff. But the interior of this offensive line, you would have to figure, is sort of the part that Wade Phillips has to be salivating over attacking in this game plan come Monday night, no?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think we've seen from Patrick Mahomes, he's very mobile. He doesn't give himself enough credit. You know, I don't think anybody's going to compare his like 40 time to, you know, Lamar Jackson's at this point, but if we actually had a 40 time for Lamar Jackson, so that's a totally different story. Sorry for a tangent there, but, he is remarkably mobile and very adept at getting out of the pocket, throwing on the run, but he has not faced an interior line like this. And I think we have seen a little bit that he can get flustered if you're chasing him a lot and hitting him a lot, especially early in games. You know, he hasn't handled the pressure. But look, this is his 12th start that he's going to make. I mean, so that's to be expected for a quarterback of his kind of age and experience. So, yeah, I mean, I think if they're going to get to him and disrupt that offensive game plan that Andy Reid is creating right now, yeah, it really, really starts with, you know, Aaron Donald and hitting him. And, you know, what he's shown, what Patrick Mahomes has shown is, you know, a little bit of that Russell Wilson, where he's able to get out, he's able to continue making plays even while he's under pressure. But he might have to do that a lot, given what the Rams are going to present on that defensive line, even if it's not coming necessarily from the edges.
Right. The tangent, if you don't need to apologize for tangents here on the show, I will say that much, because I'm going to ask you about a totally different tangent. Patrick Mahomes today, stories have come out. Number one, Patrick Mahomes enjoys ketchup on his steak. And then perhaps even worse, Patrick Mahomes enjoys ketchup on his mac and cheese. Now, you are the mother of a small child, so I'm assuming you've seen some food combinations that adults may not find quite as thrilling. But does this change the way you view Patrick Mahomes?
I mean, not entirely. I mean, he's it doesn't make me want to go out to dinner with him necessarily, or like trust him to pick the restaurant. But I wouldn't like slam my napkin down and storm out of the restaurant if I was having dinner with him and he put that ketchup on his mac and cheese. I would probably ask him what the heck was going on. But, you know, look, he's very young. I think a lot of us, you know, when we were in college, probably ate some weird stuff, didn't have the most sophisticated of palates. So, you know, look, he already has a lot of money. He's going to have a lot of money pretty soon. Hopefully he can be exposed to some better dining experiences. I mean, hopefully he's not like dousing his, you know, Jack Stacks or Oklahoma Joe's barbecue in ketchup there in Kansas City. Hopefully there are some people who are showing him the right way to, you know, to eat his barbecue in Kansas City. I'm sure Andy Reid could give him some pointers, but it is a little questionable, but I love, I mean, Seth Wickersham from, you know, the magazine, he unearths those type of cool details all the time. And the whole steak on ketchup on a steak thing was just one of those crazy details that it seems like Seth is only able to find.
To be clear here, when you say you would not run out of the restaurant, have you had an experience in your life where someone has made a condiment choice and you have run out of a restaurant?
No, I haven't. Although, and I will say, I mean, my husband and I have completely different tastes in like condiments and, you know, like frozen yogurt toppings and flavors. Sure. So I'm used to like having, you know, the person who I'm dining with, I have opposing views to their choices, but you know, it is odd, but he can make his own choices and, you know, hopefully he'll grow to appreciate, you know, just a great like medium rare steak that doesn't need anything else on it.
There was one time when I was living in Boston in college, and speaking of college palates, we got like a pizza place menu on our door that we had never heard of before. And it had like a frozen yogurt section with like a list of like 100 toppings. And one of the toppings listed was meatball. Like it was
What?
It was like Twix, you know, like Twix, Snickers, meatball, Milky Way. And it was like, what? Meat, like, and so we called and we were like, hey, can we get like a pizza and one meatball frozen yogurt? And they were like, yeah, sure. One meatball frozen yogurt. No problem. And so we were fascinated. We had no idea what was going to come. And then it showed up and it was like 100 grand frozen yogurt. Like really, like there was like some kind of miscommunication, but it was so confusing and so distressing to me, the idea of meatball frozen yogurt.
So it just came on the side. It was like frozen yogurt and then like a meatball in a cup.
No, there was no meatball to be found. It was like a frozen yogurt that had like 100 grand in it and no meatball to be spoken of. It was very confusing and very, very, very distressing. But
I think we need to get Seth Wickersham on the case. If we could get him to investigate, that would be great.
I think Patrick Mahomes should be allowed to eat whatever he likes, as someone who's been bullied for his condiment choices or lack thereof online. All right, we'll get back to the rest of the AFC West with Lindsay here in a moment. But first, wanted to talk about Dollar Shave Club. And I'm a lazy guy. Talked about this a little bit in the past. I don't want to go out to the store, wait online, walk around in the cold, in the snow, in the muck of Manhattan. It's not for me. I'm lazy. I want to get my food delivered to me. I want to get my dry cleaning delivered to me. I know it sounds like maybe this is a joke, but this is all things I do on a regular basis. And I want to get my toiletries delivered to me as well. And the good news is I can do just that with Dollar Shave Club, because Dollar Shave Club is everything you need to get ready, no matter what you are getting ready for, whether it's your hair. Again, I don't need that, but I'm sure other people out there do. For your skin, I got some of that. Your face, I got one of those. It's all right. It could be better, I'm not going to lie, but it looks its best with Dollar Shave Club. And no matter what I'm using, including, for example, face balm, whether it's the toothpaste, it's easy to set up and it's easy to use because you just order it once. You say, hey, I want to get this once every few weeks. Guess where it comes? Right to your door. They don't deliver it like down the street. That would be dumb. That'd be stupid. You shouldn't do that. They deliver it right to your door on the schedule you are hoping for. And with a handsome discount, the more you buy, the more you shave. And right now, they've got a bunch of starter sets you can try for just $5, like that oral care kit. After that, the restock box ships regularly sized products at regular price. So what are you waiting for? Don't be someone who likes waiting. Waiting is the worst. Get your starter set for just $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. I think there's another interesting game happening for different reasons in the AFC West, and that is, of course, the Denver Broncos playing the Los Angeles Chargers. And two teams obviously heading, it seems like, in different directions. The Chargers are 7-2, look to be really prime for a playoff spot in the AFC. The Broncos, clearly not the case for them. Both these teams sort of need to win this game for different reasons. Who do you think would be more upset about a loss here in this game?
I think the Chargers, because I think they're starting to figure out who they really are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they went on this epic road trip in terms of, you know, they went to Ohio and then they went to London and then they went to Seattle and they went to Oakland. I mean, they have been gone for so long that LA probably forgot that they actually had a second team, if they even remembered that they had a second team in the first place. They've been gone so long that, you know, if they come back and lose to a Broncos team that they have really dominated over the last, what, 3 years, I think that would just be a real, you know, a big setback towards the team that they're really becoming. And, you know, it's hard to imagine them catching the Chiefs in that division, although they do get to play one more time. I mean, if the Chiefs somehow lose this week and the Chargers win, I mean, they're then within a game, and that makes that December 13th game at Arrowhead even more important.
Right.
I mean, but they're really playing for, you know, certainly a wild card spot. I mean, you look around the rest of the AFC and, you know, they're not just like leading kind of that wild card race. I mean, they are like in control of that first wild card spot right now. So, you know, I think it would be a setback for the Chargers if they were to lose to this Broncos team. And I know, you know, I've been reading the stuff that's been coming out of Denver this week. They had their bye week last week and they're talking about how many, you know, they can, you know, show that they're improving and that they need to see a lot of stuff out of their young players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Vance Joseph is certainly coaching for his job, but, you know, at this point, it already feels kind of like it's a lost season in Denver. And, you know, getting to if they get to 7-9 or something, what does that really do? Does that actually force them to keep Vance Joseph longer? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think we're going to learn a lot more about the Chargers, and much more excited about the Chargers at this point than the Broncos.
You actually skipped ahead to my next question. I was going to ask you from the Broncos perspective, like thinking about their 3-6 record. I mean, is there, you think, a level of play or a final record or some evidence of something showing over the final 7 games that you think would lead them to keep Vance Joseph, or is it just no matter what happens, they are pretty much going to make a move this offseason no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they pull it together and they, you know, they can go on some sort of run and, you know, get to 8-8 or, you know, get into the wild card position somehow. I mean, the biggest problem I think that, you know, I see from how the Broncos are right now is that they keep making the same mistakes over and over and over. They don't look like they're a well-coached team. They're one of the more penalized teams in the NFL. They have the things that were issues last year that they thought they were going to fix by, you know, adding Case Keenum into the mix or, you know, making some more changes on the offensive line haven't really been any better. I mean, they still commit a lot of turnovers. Their defense is still regressed. They just make bad decisions over and over again. So, you know, I think that's what should be most troubling if you're John Elway and Joe Ellis and all the folks that are running the Broncos right now is kind of the repeated ineptitude that we're seeing out of the Broncos. If they could make a run and they show that they fixed everything here after the bye week. Mm-hmm. And you know, they were kind of talking about that this week, that, oh, we got to really, you know, self-scout and we got to spend a lot of time focusing on ourselves and we're fresh and we're healthy. They're getting, you know, Royce Freeman's supposed to be back. I think Darian Stewart, their, you know, starting safety should be back. They're going to be getting some pieces, but this isn't a team that over the last couple of years, and certainly not under Vance Joseph, that has actually played well coming out of one of these bye week type situations. They certainly didn't last year. They were hot going into their bye week in 2017 and then came out the next week and just got their butts completely kicked by the Giants, who were a bad team last year. And they came out of their mini bye earlier this year after that big win against the Cardinals on a Thursday night and played really poorly the next week. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm more pessimistic than most people about the Broncos right now, but I just think that they really need to be kind of in full on, let's focus on next year, see what we can get out of these young guys. Let's learn a lot about all of these guys. And, you know, there's a risk that if they get to 7-9, I mean, that's going to be probably bad enough that it gets Vance Joseph fired, but not bad enough to actually get themselves in position for a really high draft pick.
Yeah.
Which at this point, isn't that what you really want? You know,
what do you think is the best possible outcome for the Broncos? Would it be if they just go 3-13 and lose out and fire everyone and just start, you know, realize, okay, we have to start afresh? Or, like, would it be better if they showed signs of life and went, you know, 5-2 over the final 7 games and went 8-8? I mean, is it, like, what's the most appealing outcome for this team?
Yeah, and it's tough because, you know, you always talk about tanking and, you know, players never want to tank and their careers are way too short to actually tank. But organizationally, you can kind of tank. So, you know, I think maybe best case for kind of the long-term view of the Broncos is that they end up being bad enough that they decide, okay, we have to kind of start over, find a new head coach, new coaching staff, possibly a new quarterback if your draft pick is high enough that you can actually find one that you like in the draft, although it's not like John Elway has shown given anybody a lot of confidence that he's going to draft the right one, even if he gets the chance again. But I think, you know, so I think maybe the best case long-term scenario is that they finish, 6-10, maybe 5-11 again, but that you're also getting a lot of play out of your young guys. Mm-hmm. I think they finally have a rookie class that's actually producing and, you know, like get Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton a lot of reps now that Demaryius Thomas is gone. Let those guys kind of really grow into their roles that are going to be their future as their number one and number two receivers. You know, see what you can do with Bradley Chubb, you know, experiment with it, all sorts of different packages and ways that you can, let him go and chase the rookie sack record, see if you can get more growth out of Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, because those are the guys that you're going to be building around long-term. It's not, you know, as much as I've enjoyed covering some of these guys, it's not Domantas Peko and Chris Harris and Derek Wolfe, the guys who have kind of been here for the Super Bowl year, some of those guys who were here for the Super Bowl years, but are, you know, now 30 and older.
Right. In getting back to the Chargers briefly, in terms of how they perform this year, of course, 7-2, like you said, in great shape to make the postseason. Is it fair to stop waiting for them to turn into the Chargers who seem to blow every positive opportunity they get? I mean, they haven't had a game like that this year. They're 7-2. Their losses are to the Chiefs and to the Rams, who are maybe the two of the three best teams in the league alongside the Saints. But they haven't had that game where they blow it with a huge lead or with a great opportunity. And yet that Raiders game last week, I mean, Will Brinson was tweeting about it. I felt the same way. They looked absolutely flat in the first quarter. They were down 3-0. Raiders are moving the ball. And it kind of felt like it was one of those games the Chargers do lose to a mediocre team in a situation where they should win, and they didn't. They came back and won the game quite comfortably in the long run. But do you still feel that way? Do you still feel like they're kind of like waiting to slip on the banana peel? And if you do, what do you think it would take to stop worrying about the Chargers in that way?
I mean, I think we always are going to be kind of waiting for that just because that's what we've seen it hasn't just been 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's been a very long time that this is what kind of happens with the Chargers. And there's always going to be a game that, you know, Philip Rivers is going to have that big clunker of a game where he's going to throw 4 picks and they're trying to do that. That's going to happen. It's been, I suppose, encouraging that even as their kicker issues persisted through September and October, they didn't lose a game because of it. They were last year, they would have been in playoffs last year if they had had a more competent kicking situation through the first half of the season. And that's not going to keep them out of the postseason this year. Knock on everything. This Bagley kid, Bagley, how do you say his last name? Seems to be the guy that they're going to be able to stick with. They did it a game too late, I think. You see some little things in there. I mean, Keenan Allen has thrown a fit here or there. They seem to have gotten that rectified. I think the thing that I'm just holding out to see with the Chargers is it's not this week. It's not even necessarily next week. It's what's going to happen when they play the Chiefs, because that's really been the hurdle that they haven't been able to get over. And, you know, it's been years. I mean, I think I mentioned that the Chargers have owned the Broncos for the last 3 or 4 years, but the same exact thing has happened. The Chiefs just beat the Chargers over and over and over again. And it's happened in LA, it's happened in San Diego, and it certainly has happened at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, which is where that next game is going to be. So until the Chargers can put together a really good game against the Chiefs, I'm going to still not be penciling them in for a long playoff run. I'm certainly going to, I would be shocked if they don't make the playoffs at this point, especially looking at kind of the mediocrity of a lot of the rest of the AFC at this point, but I'm not going to look too far ahead and think that they could win a big road game in January until I see them go into Arrowhead and win in December.
Yeah, I mean, there are three road games left even in December are Steelers, Chiefs, and Broncos. So the Broncos game might not be as pressing. It's week 17, but Steelers and Chiefs, you know, two teams that they might see in the postseason. And I don't know if they have Joey Bosa back. I wouldn't count on them winning, but they've been really good. I mean, the Philip Rivers has four interceptions all season. So, like, he hasn't had game yet.
Yeah.
I still think I'm worried about it happening every single week, but I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for me to stop being worried. And I still feel like every week I'm kind of expecting it to be the week where they do collapse. And it could happen in this Broncos game. Who knows? The Broncos have delivered impressive performances against the Rams on defense. Could certainly force that against the Chargers. We should finish up talking about the Oakland Raiders, who, again, are not especially good this year, to my knowledge. I believe they are.
Oh, no?
No, they're 1-8. Very underreported story here that the Raiders are not doing well. In terms of the rest of their season, again, I asked this about you with regards to the Broncos. Is the best case scenario that they continue to be terrible? They finish 1-15, 2-14, and they do end up just finishing with the first overall pick in the draft? Or do you think it would be good if John Gruden actually showed some ability to coach some of these younger players into competent performers and they went 4-12, ended up with the fourth pick?
Go 0 for the rest of the way. Just burn the whole thing down. I mean, it's so clear that Gruden is focused on 2019 and then especially 2020. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if so many of your moves were all about acquiring draft capital and first round picks, make those the best picks that you can get at this point. Because, I mean, what are you going to try to do? It's not like you're trying to, you know, save some sort of business opportunity, you know, save face in your home market and get your fans excited. Mm-hmm. You know, building towards Las Vegas is all about whatever your team is going to be in 2020. And there is very little about this team in 2018 that's going to be applicable to 2020. So it's not like, you know, their fans sitting there in Las Vegas going, oh, well, they're bad right now. No, if you're a Las Vegas Raiders fan, if those people exist, if you are, hit me up. I would like to meet you. If those people exist, they don't care what the 2018 Raiders look like. They care about who are those draft picks going to be. Let it be the number one overall pick and how many other high picks that they could possibly get. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a mess. They're so clearly moving beyond this season. And I guess if we just figure out what Derek Carr's future is, I guess that's the other big question right there is, do you want him to play well, show more signs of life and show that he's a better fit for whatever John Gruden is trying to do on offense? I guess maybe you want to see a little bit of that just to get some clarity about what their quarterback future is. But yeah, I just think this is if you're a Raiders fan, I'm sorry. It's been so rough. You're losing your team. I mean, but yeah, just don't even try to win any more games.
Well, that's what I was going to finish up asking you. I mean, do you think Derek Carr is playing for his job, his future with the Raiders in 2019 over the final 7 weeks of this season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you look at how they could get out from his contract, he has to be. And when he looks around and he sees the guys that he kind of came in with and grew up with that were, you know, similar draft stature as he was, being gone because of contract reasons or lack of a relationship with John Gruden, for whatever the case might be. I mean, I guess the best thing going for him right now is that his agent isn't Joel Siegel. I mean, did you see that interview that Mark Davis gave last week where he talked to Paul Gutierrez of ESPN, the Raiders beat reporter, and he basically said that, you know, they knew that since Amari Cooper had the same agent as Khalil Mack, that, well, they knew what was coming, so let's just deal him now. And it's just really setting up a really bad precedent for any teams that want to play hardball with the Raiders in the future. But I mean, I think he is certainly playing for his job, and I would not, for no matter how many assurances or, you know, Gruden and or Mark Davis or Reggie McKenzie gives about Derek Carr being their guy, if you're Derek Carr, you should not feel comfortable. And, you know, you might want to have a realtor handy just in case.
Yeah, I'm not ready for people to lose their job, but it just seems like they're burning the whole thing down, and Derek Carr is not going to be in the building to the ground.
And if you're Derek Carr, play for your job. Maybe you're going to be the guy that they're going to move to Las Vegas with, and they'll finally replace those billboards that we've talked about and put your face on them instead of John Gruden's. But look, if Derek Carr gets cut next season, there are going to be four or five teams at least that are backing up a truck to sign him. I mean, he's not going to be unemployed very long. He is definitely well respected enough around the league that if the Raiders do decide to move on, he will end up, I think, probably a better long-term situation than a complete rebuild and moving cities.
Okay. So I think I'm going to pose the same question to Catherine at the end of the next segment when it comes to the most prominent free agent from the AFC North, which is Le'Veon Bell. What if Derek Carr does leave the Oakland Raiders in 2018? Which team do you think Derek Carr is lining up for in week one of 2019?
Ooh, that's a good, I mean, there's several who clearly need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars definitely need a new starting quarterback. I think the Denver Broncos are going to need a new starting quarterback, and
yes,
that would be a really fun way to revive the Broncos-Raiders rivalry that has kind of gone kind of passive over the last several years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be, as far as a storyline, that would be incredible. And I think we all know that John Elway would much rather sign a free agent quarterback than actually draft
yes.
one. So that would be, from a storyline and storytelling perspective, that would be fantastic.
That's not out of the question. Totally plausible. Totally plausible. Well, Lindsay Jones, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm sure people want to check out more of your work. Where can they go ahead and do that?
So yeah, I'm theathletic.com, and I'm on Twitter at @ByLindsayHJones. And thank you for having ladies night on your podcast this week. I really appreciate it.
It's ladies afternoon. We're not recording this in the evening. We're not recording
it's
this at
ladies night.
We're not recording this at some random Panera Bread. We're recording this in a studio.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out to female NFL reporters and, you know, diversifying the media landscape here.
Yes. Well, as the whitest of white men, it's nice to have other people on the show who do not look exactly like me once in a while. I try my best. But, Lindsay, it's a pleasure to have you on. We're going to go to a break here. Come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. Joining me now, second half of the show here, we're going to talk some AFC North with Catherine Terrell of ESPN. Catherine, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you are someone who covers the Cincinnati Bengals primarily for us. You cover horse racing as well. Of course, we're going to talk about the AFC North as a whole. But last time you were on the show, we were sitting here talking about a Bengals team that was doing quite well. The Steelers game was coming up. We were talking about that game and saying basically that they needed to win that Steelers game to be taken seriously. Since then, things have not gone great for the Cincinnati Bengals. So what has happened to cause the Bengals to lose three of their last four games, including that loss to the Steelers?
I guess I wasn't wrong. I said they needed to beat the Steelers, and of course they have 118 left, and they blow it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so typical Bengals-Steelers. It's unbelievable. Since then, it's just been one bad thing after another. I think the defense just took a nosedive after that game. And they did have a lot of injuries, but mm-hmm. injuries aren't an excuse for the atrocious defense that followed. I mean, first they I'm trying to remember the order of things. I think it was Dolphins and Steelers,
yep.
and then
Chiefs.
Trying to remember who they played next. The Chiefs next. Okay, that's why I don't remember, because it was such a bad game. So, you know, they allow 500 yards to the Chiefs. They almost blow a big lead to the Bucs. They get blown out by the Saints. I mean, not only blown out, you look at that box score and think, wow, that's awful. You could not believe how awful it was. They couldn't mm-hmm. stop the Saints at all. If the Saints had wanted to score 70 points, they would have. So, yeah, I'm trying to sum up what's happened. But I think really maybe they just – the message wasn't getting through from defensive coordinator Terrell Austin mm-hmm. to the players. I don't know, but I do know that they've always had, or at least since training camp, their weakness has been linebackers. And not only are all their linebackers injured, they have forgotten how to tackle. So, I mean, really, if you throw out a problem, the Bengals probably have it on that side of the ball right now.
Mm-hmm. And Terrell Austin paid for those problems with his job this week after the 51-14 loss to the Saints, like he said, a game where the Saints took out Drew Brees, rested their guys. They were up 35-7 at halftime. Drew Brees 45-7 at the end of the third quarter after the Drew Brees rushing touchdown. Really the ultimate insult, seeing Drew Brees run a score in, even on a sneak. Do you think the Austin firing was deserved? Do you think it's actually going to improve things with how the Bengals are playing on the defensive side of the ball?
Yes, because the defense was so bad. It's mm-hmm. not only just bad, I mean, they're historically bad, and I've had the pleasure of covering several historically bad defenses. This is actually number three, the 2012 New Orleans Saints, who gave up 7,042 yards, mm-hmm. an NFL record that the Bengals are on pace to break. Then, of course, the 2014 Saints, who I think allowed a record for passer rating against them, that resulted in Rob Ryan getting fired. Mm-hmm. In every one of those instances, the defensive coordinator got fired.
Yep.
You just, if you are looking at it and you're realizing there's no way to fix this as we currently are, then you have to make a change. And I think that they just felt that there was no way to fix the road they were going down. And it's a shame. I really like Terrell Austin as a person. Mm-hmm. I think the players liked him as a person. He's a hard guy not to like. You feel for him. But the Bengals are in a position where they can still salvage the season. And they're by no means out of it. If they beat the Ravens, they're doing okay. They have an easy second half schedule. They can make the playoffs, but they had to stop the bleeding. So mm-hmm. I think that in that sense, it is warranted. But I'm wondering how it's going to look with Marvin Lewis calling the plays now.
Well, Marvin Lewis is calling the plays, and he has a friend along for the ride, someone who we talked about earlier this year as someone who might end up making his way to Cincinnati, and that is Hugh Jackson, who was fired by the Browns and has been brought in by the Bengals based on something. I don't think it's his track record in Cleveland. So why do you think Hugh Jackson ended up in Cincinnati again after coaching there previously, and what role do you think he's actually going to play over the remainder of the 2018 season for Cincinnati?
Well, almost literally the minute he got fired, all of the writers in Cincinnati were asking, when is Hugh Jackson going to be back? It's actually kind of funny. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, I think three of us posted the same joke at once. Like, get ready for Hugh Jackson. I mean, it was just that obvious. He and Marvin Lewis are very close. They talk almost every week. That's more than I talk to my friends. And I'm, 30 years younger than Marvin Lewis. I was about to age myself. So they are incredibly close. They call each other. They say they're like brothers. So it's not surprising that Lewis would bring him back because he trusts the guy more than he trusts really anybody. And the thing is, now that he's calling the defensive plays, if he's addressing the defense, he's completely missing what's going on offense. And he said that happened in the game against the Saints. He had to have his back turned. He's trying to talk to the defense. He didn't know what was going on the field. So basically, Jackson can be down the sideline and kind of help him with that. And Lewis made it clear that Jackson was not helping with the offense. Mm-hmm. I think he wanted us to know he's not here to meddle in Bill Lazor's offense, which that's a big deal. The current defensive coordinator is there, the old one's hovering over his shoulder. You don't want to create staff tension. So Lewis said he'd be doing analytics. He'd be helping with the defense from an offensive perspective, and then another voice on the sideline. But, you know, really, we'll see how it plays out because Jackson was like, of course I'll help with the offense, whatever you want. So it kind of seems like no one really knows what he's actually going to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, when you tell me Hugh Jackson is going to do analytics based on what he did with the Browns,
that's
a tough sell for me. I'm sure Hugh Jackson learned some stuff while he was in Cleveland.
You would hope.
Yeah, I don't think he's not a smart person. I think you have to be a smart person to get this far in the NFL. Not the first person I would look towards in terms of analytics, in terms of improving my team. But we will see. Certainly still plenty of the season to go in Cincinnati. The team the Bengals are playing this week in a hugely important game for their chances in the playoff race in the AFC is the Baltimore Ravens. They're at Baltimore this week, and they're a team that is also in some sort of flux with Joe Flacco possibly having a hip injury. After the Steelers lost in week 9, there were reports, even before the game actually, there were reports that John Harbaugh, his job could be in jeopardy heading into the bye week. He has not been fired. He's still there, and Joe Flacco may not be playing because of that hip injury. So do you think at this point, John Harbaugh is coaching for his job over the second half of the season, given what you're hearing, given the tea leaves about the reports that are leaking out into the media?
I would have to think so, because the Ravens don't operate like Cincinnati does, mm-hmm. in that no one thinks Marvin Lewis is coaching for his job. two different teams. I would think so, because right now I see a team that's regressing. They've lost three straight.
Yeah.
They should be more, I mean, they should be a better team than their record says they are. I mean, actually at one point at the beginning of the season, people were saying the Ravens were better than the Bengals, even though the Bengals beat them. I mean, there was like a 2 week period. They looked really good. And then I don't know what happened, but yeah, I definitely think it's kind of a make or break game for both teams, because if the Ravens lose, they're out. I think, I mean, I think they would have to be. If the Bengals lose, they're not out. But it would, I mean, they'd be walking an incredibly thin line, but they'd really need to win this game. So Harbaugh may be coaching for his job. Flacco may be on the verge of losing his job, but in Cincinnati, it doesn't really appear that way, except for, of course, Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, do you think with Joe Flacco, you know, this is a guy who played through a torn ACL, where it looked like, not only did he play through a torn ACL, but it was more like he had like a fly on his knee when he got injured in that game a couple of years ago. He just sort of was like, ah, it's a nuisance. But it didn't seem like he had a torn ACL in the way that other players tear their ACL. It just seemed like he wasn't really aware of the injury. So, I mean, you would assume he can play through most injuries, that a hip injury is not necessarily going to bother him in the way that other players might be bothered by a hip injury. But just in terms of his performance, I mean, don't you think it's time, or maybe I'm being aggressive, but do you think it's time for them to just try Lamar Jackson just out of a sense of, hey, we're 4-5, we're playing for our season, we have to try something different just to spark this offense that hasn't been very effective for, oh geez, almost a few years now?
Yeah, I will say this about ACLs. They're so weird. It's so weird how players can just walk off and look totally fine. Mm-hmm. I think they don't always, some of them say they feel it right away, but I think some of them don't. You know, when Carl Lawson, the Bengals, tore his ACL, and Adam Schefter reported that, and I saw him in the locker room like 2 days later, and I looked at someone, I said, was Adam wrong? He was just walking through the locker room like totally normal, everything was fine. But I mean, Lawson works out like a fiend and like takes care of his body, so he's kind of like an anomaly. But Flacco is tough. I mean, tougher than anyone gives him credit for. Just like you said, he played through that. However, I think it's do or die for the Ravens. I think they have this first-round pick who is expected to succeed Flacco one day, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, why don't you try it? Clearly nothing else has been working. I think it's a better deal to try him than to put Griffin in if you're not going to play Flacco. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you got to see what you got, right? So, yeah, I would definitely play him. And honestly, the Bengals haven't had a great track record with rookie quarterbacks lately, so I don't think it's so cut and dry that the rookie plays and the Bengals win. I think, considering they can't tackle right now, he could give them some trouble if he plays.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the Bengals defense starting the show. Terrell Austin, of course, was just fired. And this is a pretty friendly matchup for Lamar Jackson, and doesn't get a lot tougher. It's the Bengals this week. It's the Raiders at home next week, and the Raiders are, of course, a mess of a totally different enterprise when it comes to John Gruden's defense there. He's at the Falcons the following week. That defense has been a mess. They're not likely to win that game necessarily, but a really ugly defense. Then the same thing in Kansas City the following week. Great team, but a pretty mediocre defense. And then the Bucks, the week after that, it might be even worse than the Bengals on defense so far this year, and that's how bad they've been. So, I mean, it's five defenses that you would figure, if you're ever going to integrate a young quarterback, if you're ever going to give him the opportunity to succeed with a veteran team, you're going to have to bring him in at some point. Why not this friendly stretch of games?
Right, because what, I mean, people might disagree with me here, but what you have to lose? You've lost the last three. You have to win this game. And if you don't, like I said, you might be out. So try everything. Try this young quarterback and see if you get a Deshaun Watson, like performance from him. Coaches probably don't think this way, but I'm thinking this way. I'm thinking they should see what they got. And hey, if they beat the Bengals and suddenly it's like, all right, maybe this guy can lead our team. And honestly, teams don't have a lot of film on him right now too. So that's kind of another advantage they have by playing him, I think.
Yeah. And you've had the whole bye week to sort of integrate some new concepts, take that stuff that maybe you've been using on a play-by-play basis here for maybe even a series here or a series there or a red zone snap here or a red zone snap there and making it a more focal point of your offense. And I think from John Harbaugh's perspective, you mentioned having nothing to lose. I think that's true not only in the context of this season, but also in the context of his career with the Ravens, because this would be, if they miss the playoffs and they're 4-5 right now, this would be the fourth season in a row where they have missed the playoffs. That has not happened since the first 4 years of the franchise from 96 to 99. Now, I would assume John Harbaugh is coaching for his job over the remainder of the season. I mean, if he, let's say he, they are 8-8 or 9-7, they just miss out on the playoffs like they did a year ago where they were 9-7 and missed out in week 17. Do you think this is the point where maybe they should consider making a change, or do you think it's, if he makes the playoffs, he stays and he should stay?
I think it would depend on what the team looks like at that point. Mm-hmm. I think if, like I said, Jackson is the guy and he beats the Bengals or whatnot, and the team looks improved, even if they ultimately don't make the playoffs or exit in the first round, then you might think, all right, maybe we should give Harbaugh another year. But if they limp in or back in and they just don't look like they're going anywhere, mm-hmm. that's when you should make a change. I think the Bengals kind of felt that way. Like, they felt, all right, if the team's not getting any better, maybe we'll make a change regarding Lewis. I don't know how much they thought that, because mm-hmm. we all know how they feel about Lewis. But, yeah, you just want to see your team going forward. You don't want to be stale. I mean, and you're right. They haven't had – I mean, gosh, you think Ravens, based on, you know, their history, and think, mm-hmm. oh, they've had to have had some success. They won the Super Bowl in 2012. But before that, I mean, since 2008, that's their only – good postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of crazy, right?
Like, it is.
I didn't realize the numbers were that bad.
Yeah, I mean, the first half of Harbaugh's reign, he's been 11 years now, I believe, in the job, 5 playoff appearances, 2 conference championships, 1 a Super Bowl. The last 6 years, and we're including 2018 as a year here, 1 playoff appearance. They won 1 playoff game. They beat the Steelers, I believe, in 2014, and then lost to the Patriots in that game where they were up. And the Patriots then decided to invent a new offense with the unbalanced line and came back to win that game 35-31. But I mean, this is it's been a pretty rare, a pretty ugly stretch of performances for the Ravens, a team where, again, even though they've been 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, 8-8 in 4 of those years, only 1 playoff appearance in 4 of those seasons. So, I mean, it's maybe you're spoiled. Maybe if you're a Ravens fan, you're kind of spoiled by all the success you've had. But I mean, that's still the reality that you're into. And it might even be a situation where with John Harbaugh, it could kind of be like Andy Reid in Philadelphia, where even though he's a good coach, it might just be time to make a change because you're listening to the same voice year after year after year. And John Harbaugh might go somewhere else and be a great coach. And whoever comes in might even be someone who can sort of revitalize the franchise and with a fresh voice. And I say that, of course, knowing that I'm talking to you covering the Bengals with Marvin Lewis. I mean, I wrote a column today about the 10 most sort of exciting coaching opportunities that might come up over the next year. And I didn't include the Bengals because I don't think Marvin Lewis is going to lose his job. Do you think there is a scenario where at the end of the season, Marvin Lewis does move on from that head coaching spot in Cincinnati?
I don't, because they gave him a 2-year contract, and I assume gave all his assistants a 2-year contract.
Right.
And I would be very surprised if they're going to pay all of those coaches not to coach. I mean, honestly, that is the reality of how they operate. I just would be very surprised. And honestly, Bengals fans weren't super enthusiastic about Hugh Jackson returning because they think that if Marvin Lewis steps down,
yes,
Hugh Jackson could become the next coach.
Right.
And that's their nightmare at this point, you know, it was more of the same. Like, how could the fans get behind that? Mm-hmm. You know, you replaced Marvin Lewis with a guy that won 3 games in Cleveland, but they're actually legitimately worried about that. And it's not a crazy scenario considering he was once maybe the head coach in waiting behind Lewis.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think the Bengals organization is aware of that or cares about that in terms of the fan perception about the Hugh Jackson plausible succession plan?
I don't know. I think the Bengals always thought, said, Mike Brown used to say, even this summer, he said, if you win, the fans will come back. Mm-hmm. Well, the Bengals have been winning and the fans haven't come back. That mm-hmm. stadium against the Saints was empty, like really empty. And can you blame them?
No.
They knew they weren't going to beat the Saints. They didn't want to go because they didn't want to see their team get blown out. And that's such a weird thing when the team has a winning record. Mm-hmm. But I think in their minds, they're trying to send a message to Mike Brown that they would like to see the organization change. And to give the organization credit, in many ways they have. Before last year, they've never fired a coordinator in the middle of the season, ever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they are making steps forward. But as long as Marvin Lewis is there, it's hard for fans to really get behind it. They're just, you know, they're ready to see some sort of change.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a weirdly frustrating thing where I think this is a fan base, and I could be wrong, that I sort of been anticipating Marvin Lewis moving on for years now and been excited about what the future might look like after Marvin Lewis. And this kind of feels like, well, we're just sort of getting more Marvin Lewis with the Hugh Jackson replacement. Is there either a coach or a sort of coach or a style of coach or a coach with a certain level of with a certain skill set you think Bengals fans would sort of be the most excited for?
Sean McVay, is he available?
Sean McVay is not available.
But you want to see the next Sean McVay. I
yes.
think after all of these years, having some sort of offensive-minded coach mm-hmm. would just be such a relief to fans, because the Bengals play very conservative for the most part. I think a lot of people would say sometimes they play not to lose. Mm-hmm. Like this year, they haven't looked good in the second half. Now, there are a ton of reasons for that, but playing not to lose could be one of them. And it's hard as a fan, I assume, when you watch a team like the Saints come in mm-hmm. and they don't play not to lose. They're actually probably too aggressive sometimes, but Peyton lives and dies by that
yes.
and owns that. And it's, as a pure football fan, it's fun to watch knowing if it's like 4th and 4, mm-hmm. he's going to go for it. But the Bengals aren't going to do that because they don't think the odds favor it. It's just two different styles. So, and to end this ramble, I guess, I think that the fans would love to have a young, offensive-minded coach come in, even though the division is so defensive-oriented. I think that would be the kind of thing they would want and mm-hmm. be excited about and come back for.
Yes. So, the top of the division now, 6-2-1, the Pittsburgh Steelers. We were having, of course, as we seem to do every year, that conversation at the beginning of the season. Oh, well, they're in trouble. They haven't figured it out. They started 1-2-1. Honestly, should have lost to the Browns in the opener, nearly lost to the Buccaneers in Week 3. Could have been 0-4 to start the year, but they were not 0-4. And since then, 41-17 over the Falcons, 28-21 over the Bengals, as we talked about earlier, 33-18 over the Browns, 23-16 over the Ravens, and then 52-21, an absolute whooping of the Carolina Panthers last Thursday night. I mean, is there any reason to think the Steelers are not going to finish atop this division and as the either, possibly even the number one seed, but most likely the number two or number three seed in the AFC?
It would be hard to believe that would be the case. I don't think, I'm looking at their second half schedule. I mean, they do have they do have a couple of tough games. Mm-hmm. They still have to play the Patriots, Saints, and Chargers. However, they also have the Jaguars, who aren't playing well,
yes.
the Broncos, and they have the Bengals last, and by that point, it could be locked up. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a lock, because those are some tough games, but the Bengals haven't been able to challenge them. I don't know what's going on with the Ravens. I don't know if they can come back from the mm-hmm. downslide, and, you know, the Steelers are going to take care of the Browns. Actually, they're done playing the Browns today. And so, yeah, I mean, at this point, yeah, you would assume the Steelers are the winners of the AFC North, but there's a lot of football left to be played. I'm not trying to be like diplomatic here. I'm just looking at those particular three games and thinking, oh, those actually are kind of tough, much tougher than the Bengals' second half schedule.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the Steelers, or not about the Ravens, I should say, and sort of the heightened expectations for success there and how missing the playoffs, even with good records, might cost John Harbaugh his job there. I don't think Mike Tomlin is going to get fired. I can't imagine a scenario where he would lose his job. with the Steelers. But this is a team that it's fair to say their fan base's expectations are to win the Super Bowl every single season. And you look back since they lost in the Super Bowl to the Packers in 2010, so 8 years ago at this point. 2011, they lose to the Broncos in the Tim Tebow game, which seems like it was a lifetime ago, but 7 years ago.
That really does feel like that.
It
man. Does.
It feels a ways away. 2012, 2013, they missed the playoffs. 2014, they lose to the Ravens at home. 2015, they beat the Bengals in one of the craziest playoff games I've ever seen and then lose to the Broncos without Antonio Brown. 2016, they get to the AFC Championship game and then lose to the Patriots handily. 2017, lose at home to the Jaguars. This is a team that, I mean, they have not been to a Super Bowl in 8 years. They have not been really close in 8 years outside of one game against the Patriots where they got blown out by 19 points. I mean, do you think it's fair for Steelers fans to look at that and sort of have that expectation of, okay, if we don't make it to the Super Bowl, it's a bummer of a season and we need to think about making changes? Or, I mean, is it just sort of the reality of fans at this point?
I think considering all the talent they've had on the team the last few years, it's mm-hmm. fair to ask why they didn't do more. And it's kind of, there's two ways to look at it. That team has a big personality.
Yes.
You can either say Tomlin does a great job reining them in, or you can say Tomlin lets them go too far, because as someone who covered them in this playoffs last year, mm-hmm. I felt like it was all about a rematch of the Patriots, when we play the Patriots, just all that nonsense. And it's like, hey, you're playing the Jaguars and they already beat you. So then they go out and just lay an egg and you start to think, all right, what did they prepare for this game? Mm-hmm. What happened? Why do they look so bad? And as a fan, I would be pretty frustrated considering all the talent that team had. However, it's kind of a built-in excuse to say, we lost our best linebacker and mm-hmm. He's not easily replaceable.
Right.
And that still kind of continues to this day. And you also don't have one of your best offensive players. So I think you can make excuses. I just know last year was probably pretty frustrating that it just didn't appear to take seriously a team that had already beaten them. And mm-hmm. the way they lost was probably frustrating, but yeah, I mean, it's like clockwork. Every regular season, they look fantastic, or at least towards the end of it, and then lose at some point in the playoffs. And with this team in particular, I'm not sure how far they'll go. It's kind of hard to say. I mean, I don't know. Do you think they have the defense to take them there?
Yeah, I think that's the tough part, is that it's hard for me to believe that their defense is going to hold up, you know, against the Chiefs for a game. And granted, they beat the Chiefs pretty much in every meaningful game they've had, but I mean, we saw it happen earlier this year. The Chiefs blew them out. The final score ended up being close, but the Chiefs were way ahead for a good chunk of the contest, and the Steelers only got close within the final 2 minutes of the contest. I'm certainly skeptical that their defense can hold up for 3 games. I don't know if anyone's defense is good though at this point. I think it might just be the best possible offense. And we saw what happened with, you know, the Steelers against the Panthers on Thursday, where they looked like they were absolutely terrifying for most of that game. I'll finish up here in terms of the Le'Veon Bell situation. Obviously, it's been talked about ad nauseum. I know how I feel about it. I want to know how you feel about it. Are you surprised it ended up the way it's ended up? I mean, I guess for me, like, I always kind of figured, well, they'll figure it out. Like, he'll come back. Even if he doesn't come back for the beginning of the season, he'll come back in, like, week 2 or week 3. And if not, then I'll come back in week 10 or week 11. Like, he'll be on the roster come the December and come the postseason, and he's not. He's not coming back. It's not happening. I mean, are you shocked? Do you think it's something that other players are going to do in their situations in the future?
I am surprised. I even drafted him number 1 overall in one of my fantasy teams. Well, actually, as soon as I heard the news, I think I picked up Connor. Okay. But I did that because in my mind, I was thinking the holdouts never last. They mm-hmm. always come to a conclusion. I've covered the NFL since 2002, which isn't that long, but long enough that you've seen the threat of holdouts, and it just never happened. So, I mean, you can admire him for sticking to his guns, but personally, to me, it just feels like he's getting bad advice. I just don't know how this is a financially good solution to what he wants to accomplish. I understand not wanting to get hurt totally get that part. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand feeling like maybe the team used him too much and that he has a chance of getting hurt and then having nothing. But that's $14.5 million you're not getting back. So you have to get some mega deal from another team. Mm-hmm. I mean, and maybe he will. Maybe they're under the table talks and they already have a place in mind. And that's why this all happened the way it did. But I still just keep thinking you're never going to get the $14.5 million back. And how much could you get guaranteed after a year off football that mm-hmm. would make up for that? I mean, I don't know what you think. I might be totally wrong. It just doesn't seem like the most financially savvy decision to me. But, you know, we'll see it play out in a few months. And I'm actually, like, really intrigued to see what the market is like and what happens.
Okay, so finish up here. Catherine Terrell, week one of the 2019 NFL season. Le'Veon Bell is about to get his first carry of the campaign. Which team's uniform is he wearing?
I'm trying to think of the most likely contenders.
I'm assuming
probably the Jets.
I was going to say that. Just, I think we can rule out the Cincinnati Bengals. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think you can rule that out. I don't think they would pay him what he wants.
But the Jets.
Not at that position. I think the Jets have been tossed around as a contender. I don't know exactly how much cap space they have.
I can tell you, it's a lot of cap space. They can certainly afford to bring him in.
And they would, I think. I mean, they've made these slashes before. Mm-hmm. I would rule out the Bengals for you. They already have Joe Mixon, and I don't think Mixon and Bell like each other very much anyway. So I think they're happy with what they have there. But, the Saints already have their guy. The Saints are the type of team that would definitely do that, but they don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Who needs a running back really badly and have cap space? I mean, there's not that many teams.
Yeah, the Raiders, you would figure.
It only takes one. Oh, yeah. The Raiders, that's an intriguing possibility. I mean, you know they're in total rebuild mode now, but are you going to invest, if you're in rebuild mode, are you going to invest all that money in a running back? It doesn't seem wise.
But the Raiders haven't done many wise things this year. I wouldn't count on them doing the smart thing. The Niners, maybe if they cut Jerick McKinnon, could be in the discussion. The Bucks will have a lot of cap space and could certainly use a running back with Peyton Barber struggling there, and Ronald Jones sort of not launching so far in his pro career. It'll be really fascinating. The Dolphins, a team that doesn't have cap space necessarily, but they do a lot of things like this. I could see them going after a star player. It's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to have a really fascinating market. And like you said, it's only going to take one team to sort of think he is the guy that's going to really help them get over the top and make the postseason, or help take some of the pressure off their young quarterback. Somebody is going to talk themselves into Le'Veon Bell. We just don't think it's going to be the Cincinnati Bengals. Catherine, please tell people where they can check out more of the stuff you do for us.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Cat_Terrell or on ESPN.com.
Tremendous. Catherine, always a pleasure. I'm sorry that we sent the Bengals into a tailspin last time we talked. Hopefully this will spur them into a winning streak this time around. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to my guests today, Lindsay Jones of The Athletic, Catherine Terrell of ESPN. More audio coming next week here on The Bill Barnwell Show. We'll be right back.